All right, I'm here with Tom Wentworth. Thank you for taking the chance on the Compounded podcast and coming on board and supporting me. So I appreciate your time. Next, I wanted to talk to you about Recorded Future and what you've been working on since you've started working there. How long have you been at Recorded Future now?
A little bit more than 2 years.
Okay.
Late 2019, a company that was very successful before I joined. You know, I would joke with the CEO, my boss, and, you know, he would say, oh, you're just going to come here, have a nice cushy job. You don't have to change anything. It's all working. And then COVID hits. And All of a sudden, we've got to throw out the entire, you know, marketing playbook and start from scratch. But I think we're better off for that. So, you know, we are Recorded Future is a cybersecurity company. We're securing our world with intelligence. What we help our clients do is understand the adversaries and their intent. You know, everything is connected these days, right? So there's an unprecedented opportunity for adversaries, whether it's a nation state like China or North Korea or Russia, or whether it's a bunch of criminal ransomware gangs trying to make money. Never been a better opportunity to be a criminal. And what we help our clients understand are these adversaries and who they're targeting, who are they going after, you know, what are their intents, the infrastructure they stand up to execute their attacks. So people are standing up, they're doing phishing is a simple example. They're standing up phishing domains, or they're doing weird things with, you know, standing up weird servers, or, you know, we can look at a whole bunch of indicators that help us understand what's being built out there and organizations they target. So the kinds of organizations who are targets of different types of adversaries, when you connect all the dots together, we can go to our clients with intelligence that lets them better defend themselves. And there's just cybersecurity as an entire market is crazy right now. And it's, you know, it's obviously stories are in the news every day.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So it's funny you say that, because you went there and you say the marketing channels you were using, because you were probably pretty event heavy, were disrupted. But at the same time, 2020, everybody moves online. You see massive adoption of digital tools. So the opportunities for hackers had to have gone up exponentially period of time too.
You think about it, you know, 30 years ago, we've built up a ton of expertise in security networks, right? We have firewalls, we have routers, we have endpoint protection software. And then all of a sudden you've got a 23-year-old just out of, you know, just joining a company, living at their parents' house with a 16-year-old router connecting to mission critical work systems, right?
Yeah.
So all of a sudden, you know, you had to, your entire landscape flipped upside down. It wasn't worrying about what's in your network. Now literally everything's in the cloud. And I think this was going there anyway, but at this point, everything's in the cloud. In a world where everything's in the cloud, the way you defend yourself against the adversary has to change. And I think we provide an outside in view. Most security systems are about putting up a fortress around your network. We're helping you look at what's actually happening in the real world so that you can understand it and then take the appropriate action. It's super cool stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing. And then tell me about the publications you've put together. So you all had a podcast.
It's a really cool story. So we build brand with news and research at Recorded Future. And they're both the most successful thing.
So who are you selling to? You're selling to CISOs?
CISOs, yeah. CISOs, CIOs.
In the Fortune 1000?
We have a lot of traction there. We have some of the world's biggest companies, but all the way down to smaller credit unions and higher ed. Unfortunately, these days, ransomware as a tactic can be deployed almost anywhere. Yes. So, you know, we're not selling to the 10-person, law firm around the corner, but, you know, generally speaking, you know, once you get up to 50, 100 million in revenue, you are a target for ransomware. Therefore, we might be a good fit for you. But so we do two things that are best in class. One is PR. And I've never seen PR work before, to be completely
honest. Your marketing does two things that...
Sorry, yes. Marketing is two things.
Because your product is best in class.
Product is best in class, yeah. So our marketing, we did two things, and both of these things were in process before I got there, so I don't get to take credit for it. But PR, and you know, most companies go out there and spend a ton of money on a PR agency, and they're out there proactively pitching people. That isn't how we won with PR. What we did is we have a research team at Recorded Future that's predominantly focused on writing research for our clients, because our clients want to know what Russia is up to, what's this Russia-Ukraine thing, what's happening with the Conti ransomware gang or DarkSide ransomware gang.
I mean, what I'm picturing in my head right now is kind of like a Googlebot for like seeking out and finding random like activities happening by hackers across the world, right? So like
what our product does, yeah. I mean, what our product does,
like treasure trove of data, understanding when, like, kind of, I forget how you call it, but like odd servers are getting set up across the world, and you're able to kind of understand when those things are happening. So the amount of data you must have access to is unbelievable.
It's shocking. And not only is it all those things, then it's connecting the dots, because all those individual signals are interesting. What you really want to know is that there is a, advanced persistent threat hacking group out of China who's using this specific malware to go after these specific targets. And when you combine all those together, what we actually give our customers is a very simple risk score. So we can tell you, holy moly, you know, when you combine these factors together, you know, this specific server that you're running is being actively targeted, or we see evidence of your data being connected to a command and control server that's being actively exploited by someone in North Korea. Like, those are the things that are super cool about it. But yeah, my story, let me get to the story. It's a really good story. So our research team, who, by the way, supports our product, because our research, you know, we collect all this data. Like you said, it's a Google-like thing. It's much more sophisticated. We call it the intelligence graph, but it's out there constantly indexing, contextualizing, relating. But we also have a research team who's out there doing things that complement the product. This research team is also chartered to support marketing. And this is the secret sauce part of it. Every quarter or so, they put together a piece of research that is tier one media interesting. Like, the best example I can think of is we found examples of China was trying to build, or the Vatican was trying to build relationships with China, because the Vatican wanted to get the Catholic Church back into China. And, you know, they were going to have a big meeting. And in advance of this big meeting, our research team found evidence of a group called Red Delta, a Chinese hacker group, trying to break into the Vatican to get information ahead of this meeting. So we published a report about Red Delta. We can take that report to New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, and we're going to get coverage, right? So here, most companies are thrilled when they get in Forbes once a quarter. And, you know, we are in tier one media almost every other day, sometimes even more frequently. And it's because we have something to say. Like, right, you can't get what we're talking about, you can't get anywhere else.
Yeah.
And most marketing most marketing teams will do like an annual survey or something, and they'll use that data. Like, we're doing that daily. So that, and we don't spend a dime on a PR agency. It's vast majority of it is inbound. And the stuff that we do outbound, our PR owner, Kate, she'll just call David Sanger at the New York Times and say, "Hey, David, we got a story for you."
Yeah.
Like, it is a shockingly efficient model run by one person with not a single dollar spent on a PR agency retainer. So we do that world class. But then the idea was, all right, well, but we have more stories that we can actually pitch to media. So why not flip the media equation upside down? Instead of us go out there and pitching stories, why don't we build our own media site and people will come to us? Like, that was the genesis of our effort to build a news site that we call The Record. Was, we've just got more stories to tell that we can ever possibly pitch from a PR perspective. We want to see news as a magnet that will bring people to us. So we came up with this idea as a way to, you know, as a way to be able to get our stories out in front of more people. So we went out there and hired a editor-in-chief, Adam Jodofsky, former Bloomberg, former Wall Street Journal, who had been working in a site called Protocol. We talked him into come working for a tech company, which is weird. Like, we had a great vision, but, you know, this guy, he was a hardcore journalist. And we said, we want to build the number one cybersecurity news site. And we started with zero page views on day one. And now, you know, we're in the millions a month at this point. So we've built a massive site, and we've hired four more reporters, and they get to report. They all have beats. It's very similar to what you would do if you're working at a Bloomberg. They all cover beats, and we publish sometimes 3 or 4 stories a day. These are not marketing stories. These are actually reported stories, right? So by hiring journalists, we get really reported stories. And we've become, I believe, the most trusted source of cybersecurity news in the industry. And we've done that in a little bit over a year, and it's been incredible. And
your product is your content. You're basically able to show off the prowess of your product through your content.
I can't reveal secrets in our strategy, but we do have a product that does surface some intelligence like that. So some of our reporting absolutely comes from our product.
Right.
And some of our reporting, you know, comes from other sources. Our reporters have sources. So, you know, we leverage those too. But that was part of our value prop to our reporters, is you're going to have access to our research team and to our product. So you're going to be able to get things at Recorded Future that you could never get reporting on your own at whatever media property you're working at.
Yeah. So I want to come back to this. There are a lot of companies that have a treasure trove of data inside of their products that relate to hiring or marketing data, trends in the industry. There are things that once you get to a certain size, you can start to see email data. There's things that once you get to a certain size, you can start to leverage that data.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people have trouble getting a research team that understands the value of that data and understands what would be valuable to the content team or to your, I shouldn't call them a content team.
Research team.
To your research team. And so how do you think Recorded Future was able to do that? How is a cybersecurity company able to do that
It's a bit of a cheat code, because our research team is supporting our clients. So our clients need this research. It happens to be that they let us take some of that research and, you know, do media against it. But I agree, every company who has data at scale, hire researchers, like hire people whose job it is the research team does not live in marketing, because, you know, they are actually billing to clients and, you know, they are, you know, so they're making money for the client, for the company, but they are impacting marketing in an incredibly significant way. We are absolutely blessed to have them, you know, giving some of their time to us. There is no reason why any company who has interesting data couldn't be doing something similar. Maybe not at the scale that we're doing, but own the conversation around that data.
Mm-hmm.
I think we absolutely own the conversation now around intelligence. And our vision was for the company is we want to be the Bloomberg of cyber. Think about Bloomberg. Bloomberg is also an intelligence company for financial traders.
Right.
And Bloomberg News, you know, is a way for financial traders to stay up to date in what's happening in the world. That's why Bloomberg News was created.
Right.
We want to be the
bigger business is their terminals, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's a very similar model. In fact, you know, the best way to read content from the record is inside of our portal, inside of our product.
Yeah.
And we've purposely done it that way.
Wow. Yeah. And I love that integration between the content you create, the research you produce, and your product is really interesting as well. I think a lot of companies could do that better. Who are the researchers? Are they data scientists? Are they?
No, they're all, you know, a lot of them are ex agency people, NSA, FBI, Homeland Security.
Okay. So they're analysis. They know how to get into data. They know how to dig through it, and they know how to present it in a way where
they can get it
prioritized.
They might have been doing it for the DOD or an agency, and now they're doing it for civilian. So these are people that know how to do deep intelligence research. The team is incredible.
Yeah. That's fascinating. And then talk to me about what's going on with the pod. You think about the research, you look at the record, you've kind of alluded to a Bloomberg model, but how, where do you find the value with the record from a marketing perspective?
Yeah. So I, the super oversimplified way is every, you know, and not just in cybersecurity, but especially in cybersecurity, every cybersecurity company at scale, when they get to 200 million or so, sponsors a Formula F1 car.
Yeah.
Right. Spot. And it's almost like clockwork. You can see them once they get to that 200 million, they got there and sponsored enough. There's very few left to sponsor, by the way.
Yeah.
So
10 teams,
or they, you know, they run a Super Bowl commercial, or they get a 101 billboard in the Bay Area, whatever they do. Right.
Right.
I just always, I'm not a fan of that. I will never sponsor a cybersecurity. I never sponsor an F1 car at Recorded Future. Thankfully, my boss agrees with
me. No golf tournaments.
We do a lot of regional golf tournaments, but you'll not see us sponsor the Masters, or highly unlikely, although I'd like to. But because we wanted to create value. Like sponsoring an F1 car creates value for the company. Maybe it creates brand awareness potentially, but it doesn't help record. It doesn't help the company in any meaningful way, where I have clients who tell us we're their most trusted news source. And if you trust us for news, you're probably going to trust us for your intelligence needs.
Right.
So, you know, and they will tell us like their favorite reporters work at the Record, or they're hearing about news for the first time via the Record. Like we hear that all the time. So I have a few ways that I can look at how the Record is contributing to pipeline and ARR, but the predominant way that I justify it is through the feedback I get from clients from listening. It's shocking, right?
Yeah.
I have a unique position where my CEO is a massive fan of Bloomberg. So when we come and pitch anything that makes us the Bloomberg of cyber, he's on board. So, you know, you have to have a CEO who can see the big picture, and mine very clearly does and pushes me to move faster than even I want to move. But we think that at the end of the day, this isn't a direct response medium. This is, you know, 10 years. And the podcast is another just example of our evolution in media. We had a podcast. We've had a podcast for 4 years. We've done 240 episodes or so. But we do our podcast now under the Record brand as another arm of our media empire. And we hired a former NPR podcaster, Dina Temple Raston, incredibly successful podcaster. We had her bring in her favorite podcast production team. We launched our first episode of the new podcast yesterday, and it's absolutely incredible. Like our other podcast was good, but it sounds kind of like you and I are talking now. This sounds like it is produced by professionals, because it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, our goal now is, you know, our other podcast would generally be around the 20 to 25 in the tech news podcast category, which is pretty good.
Yeah.
We want to be top 10, if not higher. So okay.
Good luck. I'm going to be downloading the podcast.
It's called Click Here. It's called Click Here by the Record. It's the first episode yesterday. It's about ransomware is a service, right? So ransomware was shitty enough. What happened is there are literal ransomware as a service gangs where anyone can go and just, like, you can pay and have somebody execute a ransomware attack on your behalf without even you having to know anything about how to do it. It's like shockingly easy.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, that's awesome. And so all of this gives you a platform to continue to launch really interesting, engaging brand building type experiences. You don't even think about it that way. I mean, you are literally, people talk about building a media company. When I was at, you know, one of my former employers, we talked about, hey, we're building a media company, but I think you have that optionality actually.
No, I can declare we've built a media company. Like we could sell the Record. You know, we got a inbound yesterday from one of the companies that you mentioned earlier. I won't say their name, but you said them earlier when you're talking about where you grew up, wanting to sponsor our podcast.
Uh-huh.
Like we could make money. We don't advertise, we don't take money, but we could. And we get inbound requests to advertise all the time.
Yeah. Interesting. When's the Netflix special coming then?
Yeah, well, the next thing we want to do is move into daily video. So that's the next thing to tackle. We're now producing 3 or 4 stories a day. There's no reason why we can't, you know, look at YouTube maybe as a platform we can invest in.
Yeah.
You know, we'll do all the things media companies do.
No, I mean,
we'll do events someday.
Netflix partners with, they partner with F1. They're partnering with the PGA Tour, and they do partner with outside companies. I'd be interested to see it.
I mean, sometimes you see there have been a few tech companies that have done movies. Envision, the design company, has done a couple of movies. I saw they just released one. Maybe we'll do a movie someday.
Our studio too is doing one, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
You should check that out. So yeah, I remember when Envision did it and I was like, oh, that is genius. We're going to start seeing more. And then a couple more companies did it. Were you at a company that did it, or maybe Cyber Reason did one?
Cyber Reason might have done one. Yeah, it wasn't us.
Okay. Well, anyway, all right. We got a couple of minutes left. I wanted to ask you, first 90 days as a CMO, what are you looking to accomplish, and how do you approach that? You have an amazing post on your blog about the first 90 days. I remember this post. Do you remember it?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
I will, but you can remind me. I was going to say, the first answer is it depends. Are you were you brought in to turn around a company, or were you brought in to scale something already working?
Yeah. So most people listening here are between 10 and 70 million in revenue and looking to scale the company up.
So if you take a job there, and if you're in the interview process, if the last CMO was fired, you know, I took over for a fantastic marketing leader named Scott Todaro, who set me up for success and did a great job. And I was on a turnaround situation. So my first 90 days, it was to do literally nothing. Like in my first, although COVID changed that plan because COVID hit like 45 days in, but my job was to listen to the team, figure out, you know, new things that we could do, break nothing, make no major decisions, just remove obstacles from the team, listen to their ideas, figure out how to help remove bottlenecks. So turns out I had to make big changes because of COVID, right? I had to, because cybersecurity companies were impacted by the lack of events that you talked about. But my plan was to do nothing in 90 days so I could come back and really understand where we needed to focus, because nothing was broken. I've also taken over a marketing role where things were broken. And within the first 90 days, I told the CEO we needed to fire the entire enterprise sales team because it wasn't working. And we literally did that. So we had to, in the first 90 days, we swapped our entire go-to-market model from being classic top-down enterprise selling to be bottoms-up product-led growth. And we promoted a bunch of BDRs to be sellers, and we had to let go a bunch of the old enterprise AEs where top-down selling just wasn't going to work for our model. So generally speaking, I think if I'm a new CMO, I'm hesitant to make changes up front unless I'm being asked specifically to come in and be a change agent. Otherwise, my job is just to support the team. Like, I'm violently against these 90-day plans that CEOs ask you to put together before you start. Like, hey, Tom, put together a 90-day plan. No, sorry, I'm not going to do it, because I don't know what 90 days are going to be.
Right.
I can tell you what I value. I can tell you the kinds of things I think we're going to focus on, but I can't.
Well, I think the plan is often, where are we going to look? Like, how are you going to analyze the situation, which is what you talk about? You want to meet with the team. You want to hear from them. You want to talk to a couple of customers. I think it's the process for getting the information you need to build that kind of platform to be able to start making decisions.
But new CMOs join, like first-time CMOs or first-time VPs, they join, they feel like they've got to make a big change right away to justify their new job. And that is not the case.
We saw that at Monster. It was like every time we had a new head of design, it was a site redesign that we had to go
stupidest
through.
Thing. Like, we're just now redesigning our website at Recorded Future, but let's change the brand, or let's hire a new agency.
Right.
Let's change the logo. Don't do any of those things. Do not do any of those things unless there's a really good reason.
Yeah. Awesome. Well, thank you for your time. I'm going to let you run. I know you have a hard stop at 4 o'clock. So thank you, Tom. Thanks for jumping on with us.
Of course, John. Happy to do it.
All right. Thank you.